Hello there, this is episode 9 of the Van Hemlock podcast, brought to you by the number 42, the Logos element Flatulence, and Elsith of phoenixlegion.co.uk. So that's the what we've been playing bit. Why don't you go first this week?
Okay, I've been playing Eve.
Eve? Alright, the Factional Warfare. How's that going?
I finally finished grinding my alt for Factional Warfare to get the standing.
You're not in it yet?
No.
That was a bit of a shock to discover the exact mechanics of it after downtime when I finally got back in there. I did a bit on the blog about it. But
thanks to your easy guide, it only took a couple of hours.
Yeah, it's a sort of classic case of my obsession won't let go. You know, I sort of go and do this massive blog post about, oh, it's really unfair and there's a massive grind and it's going to take me 3, 4, 5 weeks to do it. And in fact, 24 hours later, you know, right, here's how you do it. Step one, step two, step three.
Works very well.
Yeah, yeah. For those who haven't read the blog, go and have a look there, vanhemlock.com. But also, you can find it on most wikis or on the forums as well. And basically, it centres around the data centres, a series of small cosmos constellations that are chock full of agents who send you on very, very short and easy, very entry level sort of courier missions to go and deliver, get your graduation certificate signed.
So like 2 jumps for each.
Yeah, something like that. And then after you've done one of those, you can go and do another sort of follow on chain story mission, which is quite interesting and fun. I did the Mimitar and Galente ones. They boost your standings quite significantly as well. So if you squeeze everything you can out of that little chain and sequence, that'll leave you at about 0.45 or so.
Something like that.
Yes, and then you just need to do a little bit of extra work where you can to bring up to the 0.5.
Yeah, I finished this morning, so I'm all set to go this afternoon.
Excellent.
Conveniently just after the show.
So you're Mimitar, eh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh, me too, yeah. In Rust we trust. It's quite interesting looking at the little graph in the new militia window. Once you've signed on, you won't see it yet, but when you do sign on, that window changes and you can start seeing score tables and how all the empires are doing and so on. Predictably enough, the Kaldari have about 6,000 members and are at the top of all the different tables there. The Mimitar seem to be in second place on victory points. I don't know about kills, it depends how you're going to measure. That measures success, I suppose, but they only seem to have about half the players of the Kaldari, so
apparently we're just so much better.
Make of that what you will. Yeah.
Oh, I've heard tales of the Kaldari navy being full of PvE ship breeders.
There's a lot of Kaldari navy ravens going out there, is it? Mission runners. Oh, we'll give this faction warfare a go.
Bang.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. The horror. Galente seem to be in third place, but not by an awful lot. It's a sort of quite close thing. And the poor Omar seem to be at the bottom of the table in pretty much every category.
Apparently no one wants to be Omar.
Well, I don't know. You've got a good solid role-play side to sink your teeth into there. Yeah. But then again, you have that also with the Mimitar a lot as well, the whole sort of rebels, the freedom, the slavery. And
I think it comes down to having to use lasers and also being notably evil.
Yeah. I've been doing the Factional Warfare as well. I'm a little bit ahead of John there, and I've actually got signed up and went out on a foray the other night. It was quite an enlightening
thing.
Dodge
over strings on the audio.
It was fascinating actually. I mean, I've never taken part in the 0.0 game, so I've no real basis for comparison. But certainly, what I was seeing there was almost immediately I got pick up invited into a 30-man. Well, I wouldn't say blob. I don't have 30 people makes a blob, but certainly it was quite a large fleet, and we were just sort of roaming around the Amar contested areas. Looking at the map, it seems that the Amar were definitely much more on the defensive. There was perhaps 3 contested systems in the Mimitar defending area, and pretty much all of the Amar systems seemed to be under some kind of siege or another. So I just joined up with a basic Tech 1 Fit Rifter with 200 autocannons and afterburner, very rudimentary tank repairer, and just joined up there. Definitely the voice. You need to be doing the voice, as far as I can see. I suppose this applies also to 0.0 as well.
It's impossible to do a fleet op without it.
Yeah, this is not news to anyone who's played the Outer Rim game at all. But I think that's part of the point, really. This is an introduction for people like myself, who've generally been Empire care bears all my Eve life, to get straight into the what the outer game can be like. I don't know how, what sort of comparisons. I mean, yeah, you don't have the motherships and the capitals. You don't have the posses, but...
You got capitals. Red Alliance jumped a couple of capitals in to try and get some moons.
Oh, of course, it's all low-sec, isn't it? So yeah. You can... how did that go?
I think three went down, two were let to leave to tell the others not to come back.
So all these sort of casual 0.0, you know, casually swaggering in with their vast ships and getting beaten
owned
off
by a fleet of noobs.
A swarm of angry frigates. Go on.
Well, when you've got them locked down, there's all it takes is having enough missiles to throw at them, I guess.
I suppose, yeah. It doesn't matter how many rifters you lose. If you take the capital down, that's a win, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm still learning my way around what the actual objectives are out there. There's some complex business where you have a bunker which is invulnerable and you have to use the onboard scanner to find PvE sites, essentially, sites where there are NPCs. And sort of hold on, capture the flag on those for 15 minutes ago, and then when you've got enough of them in a system, that system's bunker turns and you can start attacking that. And when you've done that, that's basically the system win, I suppose.
It'll be interesting to see where this goes in the future. I'm willing to put money on the fact they're going to use it to replace POS Warfare and Sovereignty in 0.0.
Oh, right. What, instead of those sort of massive outpost platform things they have to construct?
Well, it's the having to... have posses up and defend them and take them down.
Because I don't really know much about how the 0.0 game works at all, but the POS warfare is not working too well at the moment, then?
It's not that elegant.
Oh, right.
And CCP have said they want to replace it.
I see. What, and then possibly have the similar kind of bunker and sub-site capture thing to do out there as well?
Yeah, I can see them moving that over.
Well,
I can see how that goes down with more experienced people.
I can see how that works on the forums. But,
well,
this is just speculation, by the way. Yeah. Not substantiated in any fashion. Don't come after us.
Well, somebody said something that a while ago, I think.
Somebody said something.
Yeah.
Top research. Well, anyway.
We only have good sources here.
Yeah. Well, I'm quite cautiously impressed with the factional warfare so far. I've only had one go at it, spent about 3 hours, joined up with a big fleet, we were roaming around. One thing that did impress me a lot was how Tech 1 frigates matter in it. They are important.
Yeah.
Because we were roaming around in our 30-man gang looking for whatever Amar big gang was also jumping about. I imagine that's quite reminiscent of 0-0 fleet combat as well. You know, the long periods of jumping about trying to find out where the hell the enemy is.
It would have been just easier to ask their alts in your fleet channel to
arrange,
tell you where they
arrange
are.
To duel at dawn, yeah. But and what happens, there was quite a lot of big ships there. There were people throwing Dominixes and Megathrons into the fray. There was Drakes. One thing I learnt quite quickly is that just because you're in the Mimitar Navy, there's absolutely no reason at all why you should be flying a Mimitar ship particularly. I mean, I like the Rifter, but... it's a mistake to think that going against the Amar Navy, you're only going to come across Punishers and Mallers and that kind of thing. It seems people are picking the ship they like the best and just going at it anyway. So your side means absolutely nothing in terms of intel on what ships you might be facing. That's a trap to avoid. And yeah, so we were running around trying to find these people, and as we were passing through the systems, some of them were in various states of contention with these little sub-sites, and every so often you'd see some small gang or solo Mimitar Navy type in there saying, you know, can someone lend me a hand at such and such site? And so our fleet commander would call up some of us frigates off of the bottom of the pile, as it were, and distribute them off out to go and assist on the local work as we were roaming around. It was just quite good. It's sort of good dynamic commandery, good navy feel to it. And so while the big blob kept on roaming around, I'd find myself sent off with a couple of other frigates to a local site to assist in the capture of one of the objectives. The objectives are quite interesting. You basically, there is nothing elaborate there at all. It's a beacon that you have to be within X kilometres of. I can't remember exactly, probably about 15.
One of the things they said was they wanted to design it so that numbers didn't help that much.
Yeah.
So you couldn't really just mob them.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, each of these little complexes has weight-rated acceleration gates. So for the smaller sites, you can only send frigates and destroyers in there anyway. So suddenly we have a role. So, yeah, we'd be sent off to go and assist some lone rifter in keeping the little objective pinned down. Because these sites, it's basically, yeah, just a buoy in space that you have to stay within 15k of for 15 minutes. And all the time, this site is continually spawning NPC ships, you know, suitable for that weight of gate.
Could I just say something?
Hmm?
That's buoy for the Americans.
A buoy, okay.
If you don't know that fact, it sounds a bit weird.
If I'm confusing you with my exotic speech and mannerisms, yeah.
I'm sure they all know, but if not, that's just...
Yeah. So it is literally hold the flag. It throws NPC ships at you. They're quite fierce. You're going to have a little bit of trouble soloing the... soloing the sites in a single, the smallest sites in a single rifter with low skills, you know, as an alt. It may require warping in and coming back. But of course, all the time you're doing this, the site is showing up on the overview, and you can quite happily get a visit from some of the 24th Crusade at any time. So you still need to have a PvP fit and watch your back as you're doing these things. I roamed around for about 3 hours and we had the voice going and everything. It was all quite Return of the Jedi, actually. I was quite enjoying the warping about. You know, I was watching all these ships just suddenly zipping off in clusters into the distance and, you know, reassembling at the next waypoint. I lost them a couple of times. Mostly when I got sent off to help with these little sites, and I had a bit of trouble finding out where they'd got to by the time we finished. But it all came to an end about 3 hours in. I did lose. I lost a ship. He'd basically picked out a contested small ship marker in one of the systems we were passing through, called up about five of us frigates and destroyers to go and sort it out. So we all turned up at the acceleration gate, warped straight in, and got absolutely jumped on by a defending force of Amarian frigates and destroyers as well. I ended up in a one-on-one with a rifter. He had a similar fit to me, as far as I could tell. The kill mail listed a 200mm autocannon 2.
That'll be it.
That was it, yeah. Oh, possibly. He was a much older character with higher skills as well. But so,
how old was your character at that point?
Oh, I don't know, about 4 or 5 days. Something like that, yeah. So yeah, it's probably unrealistic to expect to be conquering left and right at this stage, but there certainly is room for brand new alts in dinky little ships to go out there and make a difference.
Well, I've decided to,
which is good.
I've started up from scratch with an alt. Brand new character, brand new account. Paying with game cards this time. See if I can make that work.
Uh-huh.
And being a newbie is quite punishing.
Yeah. Well, it's not too bad. I mean, like I say, I went out, I lost a ship. I wasn't expecting to keep it, obviously. My clone bill at the moment is about 40,000 isk.
Yeah, that's why
I've only just clicked over into the first one you have to even pay for. So
that's why I'm not using my main.
Yeah, that's
I'm
good.
I'm at quite a substantial amount.
The cost
amount
of ship and fittings, I was estimating at about $500,000 all in.
Not too bad.
Well, yeah, exactly. After I got sent back in my pod, I got the pod out as well. I didn't get podded, okay. So that was good.
Too many other targets to take you
well,
out.
Well, yeah, there's a lot going on. You don't have time or possibly even a fit to come up with a super sniping pod destroy, you know, ship. So you'd be quite unlucky to lose your pod out there, I think. Got that all back. Started looking around Ren's market, and I managed to buy another 10 rifters and fit them for about $5 million all in.
Was that with the price gouging for people like you?
Yeah, well, that's it. Rifter prices are certainly up on the border outlands there. They're about 300,000. Usually they're about 250, 220, something like that. So, but who cares? I'm bunging millions across from my main, who's definitely not taking part in any of this and hiding like a coward.
As you do.
But yeah, I mean, that's 10 rifters ready to go. It took me about an hour to round them all up, buy them, set them up, and so on. And they're going to last me, well, I'd
10 minutes.
Yeah, I'd have some trouble getting through all of those in one night. So I think it's sustainable, perhaps for the brand new newbie.
The problem is
the very first timer.
We've both cheated and bunged ourselves for money from our mains.
Yeah, and I imagine a great many people out there are doing very much the same thing. You know, you've got someone mining away quietly for months.
If you remember back in the day when you thought that a million was a lot.
Yeah, yeah. You sort of don't even think about it, really. I mean, the average take from an Agent 4 mission is about 20 million, so that'll get me 40 rifters with fit.
Yeah.
So all I have to do is when I'm running low on war funds, I'll just pop across to the other character, go and do Worlds Collide, spend 3 hours on a Sunday doing that, bung the proceeds across, and... good for another 40 rifters, which will take a while to get through, I think.
Be interesting to see how much you can make, actually, from looting and stuff in...
Well, to do that, first you'd have to win, which I'm still working on that side of it.
Or you could just scavenge other people's dead.
I don't think it's about the money, really. There were people throwing quite big ships into the mix there. There was quite a few Tech 2s in our little fleet. Yeah. There was some, you know, a good core of Dominixes and such like. So
by no means is it all just newbie ships.
Oh, absolutely, no. I mean, and also some of the much some of the bigger little beacons that you have to do the sub captures, they were throwing, you know, battle cruiser NPCs at you. So at the very least, you're gonna have to be able to cope with perhaps 6 to 8 to 10 harbingers coming in at you. So it's, yeah, there's a role for everyone out there, which I was quite surprised at. It does seem to be developing into a kind of sort of multi-role combat thing, which I always approve of in PvP.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it shouldn't always be just the one super tank setup with the cookie cutter template with the rail gunning, you know, jumping headshot skills.
Well, that's one of the things Eve's always done really well is with the class balance if ships are classes, because they're so flexible that people always find a way of boosting ones that aren't that good and changing them all around.
Yeah, so there really is, as far as I can see, there really is no reason not to take part unless you just don't like PvP, in which case, fair enough.
But, a lot of people were saying it was going to be a massive failure before it launched.
Yeah, well, I think we'll have to reserve judgment a little bit because it is all very new, and I think there's just loads of people out there giving it a look. Perhaps we'll see, perhaps in a month or two, see what that looks like.
Yeah, if the numbers drop down.
Because at the end of the day, there is no actual reward for doing any of this. Yes, you got a new decorations tab on your character
sheet.
That's
a good way of getting your faction up for jump clones.
Possibly, yeah. That is a tangible reward. Yeah, if you do well and you're cranking up your faction quite quickly, you can probably use. Do the Tribal Liberation Navy actually have jump clones on offer?
I have no idea.
All NPC corps do, don't they?
Well, aren't you going to move up your standard Glente or Mimitar or whatever?
Well, you'll be moving up your base faction, but it's not them that's handing out the clones, is it? It's the sub corporations within. So
I'm sure it'll work.
Yeah. So, but on the whole, it's not really a path to profit or victory. It's more of a thing to do for its own sake, I think. And how appealing that will remain night in, night out, over and over again. I mean, you look at something like, perhaps hasten to draw the comparison, World of Warcraft, where the battlegrounds there, they really are throwaway things. And to be honest, I think a large proportion of people who do that are only in it for the sort of big purples that you can get by spending win points. So I'm wondering if there were no rewards at all, as well as no losses, for taking part in Warcraft battlegrounds, would people bother? It'd be probably a lot.
I think some people would. But then again, in Eve, it's different because shooting people is a reward in itself because it's so much fun.
Well, yeah. I mean, I did enjoy it. I got owned. I got the other guy down to about a third armour, but he must have had just massive tech 2 fit across the board, which is fair enough. He's willing to put more on the table than
I was. It doesn't
take
many more 5% to boost you up.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the tech 2 gear does boost various aspects of the ship quite significantly. So I was outfought and outclassed in a way, but not in such a hugely soul-crushing way that I wouldn't want to ever try again. You know,
didn't feel like you were taken out back and beaten to a pulp.
No, I just didn't quite manage to beat him, which was good. You know, it gave me a bit of hope for the future. So I shall be doing some more of that. Oh, gosh, we're still in the What We're Playing segment.
Yeah, we are.
Go on, then. What else have I been playing?
It's me still.
Is you still?
Yeah.
Blimey, I lost track. All right, off you go.
Yeah, I played a little bit of Lord of the Rings, not a lot. Mainly I've been playing Conan.
Ah, Age of Conan, yeah. Now, last show, you'd only been playing that about 2 or 3 days, so...
Yep.
2 weeks later, how's that looking? How are we playing there?
Still looks great.
Looks great, good. Well, I wouldn't have expected the graphics to alter significantly, but...
I think it's still a really nicely designed game in many ways. Mm-hmm. It's just not clicking.
Not clicking. Interesting.
I just don't really feel involved. Yeah, it's not drawing me in.
Some intangible thing that's not quite doing it for you.
Yeah.
So from a technical perspective, it's a fine game, well-crafted, all the nuts and bolts seem to be in place.
It's an early game. You can see how they're going to make it better over time. And
room for streamlining.
It doesn't feel like there's anything majorly wrong with it.
So just something about it's not really drawing you in. Have you read through your big Robert E. Howard manual there?
That might be the problem.
So perhaps it's just that you're not that Conan itself is
the franchise
for you.
Yeah, I don't think Conan's pulling me in.
Okay. So you're going to keep at that for a while? Or
I'll keep playing to the end of the first month and see what I do.
The big decision, yeah.
I'm still actually stuck in the newbie area still.
Is this that Tortage bit, is it?
Yeah, okay. The Prison of Tortage. Which does make the game feel really small.
Well, the game apparently does change somewhat after that into something we're more familiar with, a bit more of a standard MMO type of thing. I mean, that whole personal story thing that takes a lot less eminence from what I hear, but
I'm going to get out of there and see how the game changes, see if that pulls me in.
Yeah, it's probably fair to try and get out of that bit and see what the rest of the game's like before you make a a kind of brutal execution call on it.
Yeah.
All right. What else? What else have you been up to?
Well,
consoles.
Consoles. I've been playing Metal Gear Solid.
Oh right, this is the 90-minute cutscene. Have you found that yet?
That's at the very end.
Is it? Oh god. So what? You've got to actually play through the whole thing before we can do our 90-minute cutscene special podcast.
You only have to play through half the game.
Oh right.
The other half being cutscenes.
All right. Joking aside, then what's that? Any good? It's
sort of technically
next generation first-person shooter.
Well.
Or is it more of the same?
It's the same as the other Metal Gear games. Mm. But nowhere near as good. I can respect what he's done with it. He's basically turned around and said, this is my game, this is what I want to make. You'll play it and like it or not.
Fair enough, yeah. Bit of conviction there, then, definitely.
But unfortunately, it's, I don't know, maybe just time. The Metal Gear game's always been a little bit silly. You've got this stupid little cute robot. Which you just expect to have massive manga eyes or something.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's just... You got Tweaky following you around. Yeah, and the voice acting is dire.
Oh, we like bad voice acting. That's one of the reasons I look forward to cutscenes so much.
There's some weird stuff, like you can buy ammo during fights.
Can we just take five a minute?
Then delivered via monkey.
Via monkey?
Yeah.
Right, okay, whatever. Moving on.
Yeah.
Stop this review, it's far too silly.
I'm just not in the right mentality for this game.
Yeah, so it wasn't really for you as
I'm playing through, and if you skip all the plots, it makes a bit more sense and is a bit more fun. But
what's the basic gameplay like? Is it feel like a good meaty urban combat shooter or what?
It's a reasonably good sneak 'em up.
Yeah.
It's all about the
I do like those, but I tell you, as I get older and older, my levels of patience tend to dwindle. I mean, each time I play through Thief, I end up tanking more of it.
An awful lot of time you think,
I'm bored now, whip out the sword, in we go.
It's a sneak 'em up that rewards you for killing everyone. Because you can upgrade your weapons and get new ammo, but you only get that by handing in weapons from defeated enemies.
Yeah, way to avoid detection.
Yeah, so you're just better off killing everyone, taking their guns and getting all the better equipment.
Well, I suppose from a lateral thinking perspective, that's probably the best way to avoid detection, is to ensure that there's no one left to detect you. Yeah. Righto.
What else have I played? Lego Indiana Jones.
Lego Indiana Jones, yes.
Yes.
Now, I'm just taking a moment to look around the studio here at the various worktops and surfaces, and I can see an alarming number of small set pieces from the Indiana Jones film, in lovingly recreated in Lego form.
Yeah, I use them when I'm playing Burnout. Basically, when you crash in Burnout, it has the ability to take a picture on the camera.
Yeah.
So I put the camera at various dioramas of nasty things happening to Lego figures.
Which other players will see.
Right. I'm disturbed.
Excellent. So, Lego Indiana Jones. I've played the Lego Star Wars.
Yep.
The one, the first three films, the Phantom Menace and such. That was on your old Xbox you gave me. That was quite good. Quite a good little sort of platform, jump about, shoot things. I was a bit disappointed with the occasional superfluous vehicle level.
Those have gone.
Good, because those were a bit rubbish and not at all in keeping with the rest of the game.
Well, when they did the all six film version of the game, when they merged the two together, they changed out all of those into much better designed versions.
Okay, yeah. Because they seemed a bit tacked on. And
there was that horrible Attack of the Clones.
Where you're flying the sort of dropship thing.
And yeah, it was a top-down scroller thing.
God, it was a nightmare. And not utilising any of the gaming skills that you've been learning and honing for the last eight levels.
Always a bad sign, that. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's an incredibly good game.
So this Lego Indiana Jones, does that include the new film?
No.
No? So it's that's the first three films?
Yeah, which is a plus.
Yeah, well, less said about that, the better, really.
Yeah, it's very good.
Do a whole separate show on that.
It mixes up the formula a bit by having equipment to use and stuff, spades and spanners.
Yeah, because in the Star Wars games you basically swap characters and they each have the different abilities.
You still do that, but you can get other abilities by picking stuff up during the game. It's a really nice game.
Good.
I've been playing Grid.
Race Driver Grid. I have no idea what you're talking about. It's a racing game on a console. It's
a console racing game with the best feature ever.
Uh-huh.
You remember Sands of Time?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's got that.
Oh right, your car has a dagger of magical sand that you can use to undo particularly bad crashes.
When you crash, you can rewind and avoid that crash.
I think that's a good, excellent safety feature that ought to be installed on all cars.
It's a very good game, very good looking. Got it on the PlayStation, so unfortunately the controller hurts my hands. It's designed for munchkins.
Fair enough.
Yeah. If any children could afford the console, it would be perfect for them. But apart from that, yeah, quite a good game.
Yeah, excellent.
I think that's it. What have you been playing?
Oh, God, I've had a ridiculous fortnight. I've played 6 MMOs in the last 14 days, and I'm starting to get a bit stretched by it all, to be honest. Let's see. Well, there was EVE, which I've just talked about, and steamrolled it into your segment with. There was the Big Planet Side Massively
event. Oh, yes, when you were content.
Yeah, that was bizarre. I saw them talking about that Massively, and I thought I'd respond on my own blog with a bit of a thumbs up, and yes, go and attend this event, and next thing I know, I've been dragooned into actually taking part, because probably on the basis that I've played the game before and presumably knew what I was doing at all.
They thought you might be quite good. When will these people learn?
I know, I write a mean blog post, but I can't shoot for toffee, yeah. It was quite good. We sort of turned up on the Saturday night there, ran around as just normal newbies for half hour or so, and then got magically devved into this Black Ops side, yeah. I did a bit more detail about what that's all about on a blog post as well, but quite harrowing, really. It's the opening sequence of Saving Private Ryan. imagine that mixed in with a good dose of Apocalypse Now, and you're pretty much getting close.
Let me just clarify something. There's an achievement for killing you, right?
Yes. There's a special merit for killing Black Ops people.
Yeah. Did that make you popular?
Oh, yeah. We got a lot of visits. So as soon as we started off on the island, sort of at an out-of-the-way base, and, Joel's... Sakai? I can't remember. I'm terrible with pronunciations. Ranjin, the community manager for Planetside, he was there with us as well. And we had a Skype channel up and going. And, he was sort of taking us through the basics, spawning out a few vehicles. And I don't know how many of the Massively people had ever played the game before. Perhaps a couple of sessions earlier in the week as a warm-up. But it was terrible.
That is a game which... It's not friendly to newbies.
No, you need to really stick at it and resign yourself to being owned left, right and centre for a good couple of weeks before you pick up speed and start to understand how to use everything, where to be, what to do and so on. And time that the Massively folks mostly didn't have. I don't know if any of them were previous players or veterans, but just being blindsided by a 133 strong Zerg of NC. There was only about 20 of us at the best of it, at the peak. So... oh dear. It was just quite interesting hearing their reactions to it all on Skype as we were all playing through. It sort of started off as giggling and then sort of turned to incredulity and sort of a certain cheery, resigned, oh well, you know. They knew what was happening to them, what was going to happen.
None of you were really there for your entertainment. You were content.
Well, no, I don't know.
You were the NPCs.
That. I was enjoying myself, and I think they did too. But absolutely, no, the Black Ops is not a fourth team. It's not about, also capturing islands and bases. You're literally there to just cause as much trouble as you can before they bring you down, and
so
they do.
Have you got, say, a better formed respect now for the mobs in other games?
Absolutely,
the ones you
slaughter
day in, day out?
Having been a mob now for... for quite a while, then I have a new empathy for Garista plunderers and orc pawns everywhere. it was a lot of fun. I'm glad I went along. I went and had a trawl on the forums afterwards.
Ooh.
I know it's like having a broken tooth. You can't leave it alone with your tongue.
Their forums are worse than the EVE ones.
Well, I don't know. There's a certain gusto to the EVE forums and the World of Warcraft general forum that you don't find on the Planetside main discussion forum. They're generally a lot more of a resigned and entrenched and embittered lot. But I think the reception was on the whole positive. Large amount of indifference, and only a few people screaming blue murder, that yang 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 yang, slap in the face, all that rubbish. Yes, the Black Ops are overpowered, but to balance that, they were being piloted by 20 more or less complete incompetents. So
that's a bit harsh.
Well, yeah,
complete noobs is better.
Noobs, yes, perhaps. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wonder if they're Massively team. If they played for a good month or two in, got team speak and squads and outfits going, they'd probably be a force for awesome. But Yeah, unfortunately, we'd sort of crashed the server a few times, which probably didn't make us many friends. But something to do with the way the Black Ops coding's gone in and perhaps hasn't had as much playtesting in the field as it could have done. But
I don't imagine it gets used every week.
Well, quite. And also, we turned up just as one team was being ganged up on by the other two and being driven off the world, which was, again, a bit of unfortunate timing. Poor TR. My sympathies to all Gemini TR of that night. I did try and drop myself on a few of your towers now and then to get mown down by some other teams than the NC, but... I think on the whole, most people, I don't know, it's hard to say. I think it probably was a success, but I think the point of the exercise, and a few people on their forums did seem to recognise this, is that historically, Planetside gets almost no SOE love. You know, it doesn't get much in the way of headlines, it doesn't get much in the way of resources or development or investment, I imagine. So any kind of news is good news.
And it got a lot of headlines.
Well, a lot of, yeah, massively.
And we're talking about it.
Yeah, we're talking about it massively. Talked about it quite a lot in various different pieces. You know, what it is, how it went, and all that sort of stuff. It just raises the profile. You know, perhaps there are people out there who would love that game but have just never heard of it.
I think we've covered this before, but it's definitely...
We did a little segment on Planetside a couple of shows back.
It's definitely a game which deserves to be out now, not when it was out then.
Yeah,
because now it's just so much more suited to the internet.
Yeah, have a look back through our archive to find the show where we talk about Planetside. I'm not going to tell you which one it is, A, because I can't remember, and B, I want you to download them all. Okay, yeah, what else was I playing? So that's two out of the six. There was EverQuest 2. I've been sort of puttering about in there because it's free.
Yeah.
The Living Legacy thing. I'm not even going to get involved in the slap in the face that Living Legacy's been to the existing players. I mean, I can see both sides of the argument there. Personally, I've not really been... I've not even seen Rise of Kunark yet. No. I've not even found the boat. No, I think there's a quest somewhere. I had a little look at the Isle of Mara, which was a sort of... adventure pack which has been enabled for me, which is a whole separate little set of zones that's done in a sort of oriental theme, which is something you haven't normally seen in EverQuest 2. You can get to that from the bell on the docks in Nectarless Forest, and it seems to be content for level 60 plus, which I'm sort of not quite ready for yet, but the initial little village with the dojos in and on the rice paddy fields and stuff is quite nice. It made me a little bit nostalgic for Guild Wars in a way, but the whole factions expansion there. Also, I've been having a quick go at that Legends of Norrath card game. I've only just got through the tutorial. It is quite long.
Well, you actually managed that, though.
Yeah, I finished it. It crashed right at the very end, but, you know, can't have everything.
You found the Brent card?
It seems... No, I haven't found the Brent card yet. No, I didn't recognise any other podcasters either, but... it seems to be a sort of variation on Magic the Gathering, you know, with the two armies and the single play field, except you have two quests in the play field, which divides your main play area into two different battle areas. So you're sort of running two little games of creature combat at the same time. And then there's your avatar who sits at the back. You're not just 20 hit points. You also can have equipment and abilities. I mean, they've tied it quite well to the game itself, because it's about completing quests to win. You can kill the enemy player by removing all the hit points, but the other way to win is by gaining enough quest points by completing various quests that get played on each half of the main table. I've not played anyone in any actual players yet, so and it's finding the time. I'm not sure if I'm going to get much more out of that before the whole thing's up. I'm very busy at the moment, but it seems interesting. I'm not sure if I'd stump up money, because I think you can buy and play it as its own application, because when you fire it up, it just launches this massive window across your main EverQuest 2 window. I think perhaps it's possible just to have it as its own application. I'm not sure.
If not, then it probably should be.
I'd have to have a look, yeah. They're just releasing their fourth edition set of cards there, Oathbreaker, which is a whole other expansion set of cards. I've not found where the shop is to buy more cards. Presumably it's integrated in there somewhere. I'll have to do a bit more looking.
Are they dropping for mobs?
I haven't seen any drop myself yet, but I'm wondering if I have... Is that perhaps because I haven't enabled my own deck building section yet? Perhaps it doesn't realise I need some yet.
So
I don't do a lot of fighting either. Killed many mobs in my 2 weeks there. I've just mostly been zooming about looking at stuff.
Yeah, you only play these games for sightseeing.
I'm such a tourist, yeah. Okay, so that's EverQuest 2. Then there was a Guild Wars New Club. We were trying to get a bit of PvP going this week, but unfortunately we had some timing issues and couldn't get four people together. We had three, and then one left and another person came along. Yeah, we're up to about five ancillary members there. Members is a loose term for the Tuesday Noob Club there. We don't require actual membership. Friends clubs, friends lists, good enough. Yeah, so we went and did the hysterical Eye of the North dungeon with the giant rolling balls of fire and the pass the parcel fire bomb boss at the end, mostly because it was just so much fun last time and a couple of us hadn't seen
serious
it.
Fits or comedy fits?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's I was trying to get screenshots, and I think next time we go down, I'll have to try and get fraps set up, because the whole business where you're just running for your life with these giant balls of fire chasing you around is top Benny Hill territory there. Then we were one of our members hasn't got very far through factions, so we all tramped over to Canther and bulldozed through Gyla Hatchery and the Unwaking Waters and Raisu Palace, eventually fetching up against Shiro again, which is my favourite bit of the entire game, which is the super over the top mega overpowered end game boss for factions. I got a bit grumpy about it all. It always does that to me. I get more and more taciturn the more attempts we end up having to take.
Had you set your character to be designed to defeat him?
Possibly not. No, I'm sure there is this. Well, strategy will get you so far in there, but I know where the wiki is, and I went and looked up various different people's opinions on how to deal with him. But in almost every strategy listed, the word luck seems to appear an awful lot. So. I mean, I've done it before, but I still couldn't tell you how. You know, the first time we encountered him, I was on a ritualist, and we just charged in there, got owned about five or six times, and then there wasn't much tweaking went on, but the seventh time we just went straight through, you know, under 10 minutes, got the masters for it. So it was weird. It seems very arbitrary, that particular encounter. There doesn't seem an awful lot of strategy you can apply within what's going on there. I'm sure I've ranted about it enough on the blog, though, so moving on. So we've had Guild Wars. What else? Tabula Rasa, yes. Still picking through that. I don't know. we're getting there. I think I will see 50, but I'm not sure if I'll be there much longer afterwards. And again, I think it's probably very similar to your woes with Conan, in that it's a fine game. And most people that you hear commenting or writing about it will agree, you know, it's a good game. But...
just,
you know,
lacks
there's,
that.
Well, yeah, exactly. There's this but that no one perhaps can quite define that means most people don't really last that long in there. I think perhaps, and, you know, heaven forbid that I start becoming a group dependency advocate, but I think just the sheer solo ability of it all, it is moderately easy to solo. I haven't done all classes, obviously, but, you know, you can quite happily just crank away at it in your own time, do very well, get to the end, and then what? And even some of the instances, you know, can be soloed with the right sort of tools and a bit of forethought, and you just sort of and at the level where you're meant to be grouping for them. So I don't know, perhaps the game needs to be made more difficult. Yeah.
Well, that's the
send
problem.
Complaints to Brent at Virgin Worlds. Yeah, I don't know. It's just something about that game. They're adding stuff at a fair old rate, and perhaps, you know, in a couple of months' time, there'll be a lot more there. I think perhaps more in the other stuff to do side of it. I mean, they've added a little boxing arena. There's the war game training zones, which is essentially Warcraft Battlegrounds. I don't know. Perhaps the crafting has always been talked about as needing a rework. Perhaps they need, perhaps they need a dancer profession or something. Just sort of something to flesh out, player housing. I don't know. It's hard to put a finger on it.
Mm.
But we're still going in there. And of course, my usual Tabula Rasa buddy has decided that, hey, I finally got my new computer and I've got Age of Conan, so come and join me. So I'm in a bit of a quandary there.
Can you move it up to 7?
Yeah, can I do 7 in a fortnight? That'd be one every 2 days. I have to go out sometimes. Sometimes I need to sleep. I think I can probably fit them all in. Either that or have a psychotic episode, whatever.
Well, another one.
Another one, yeah. Anyway, and
is this like the one you were having on Thursday night?
Oh, leave me alone. I was in a dark place. Anyway, so yeah, and MMO number 6 was my usual looking after business in Second Life, you know, which most people listening to this don't want to hear about. So yeah, ridiculous number of what I've been playing, and that's not even the single player games.
Did you play any single player games?
A little bit of dabbling with Sins of a Solar Empire, not much else really. Just haven't got the time.
You have to give up work.
I know. So that's what I've been trying to play.
We got some more listener mail this week.
Yay!
First of all, Lady Snaya says you're a noob.
Me?
Yep.
Oh dear. Was this my Twitter outburst that triggered this, was it?
I just think she's a very good judge of character. She hasn't even met you and she knows.
Yeah, as the aforementioned Shiro got me quite wound up, I started venting and the nearest thing to hand was Twitter, so...
That's what it's for.
Uh-huh.
And also, Zozo... If you put a glass cover over them over the winter, the frost won't affect them and the leaves will be fine.
Are you doing gardening advice? Are you trying to hijack my show?
I'm not going to explain that.
Uh-huh.
Two of us know what it means, that'll do.
Fair enough. Well, this is Gardener's Question Time with Van Hemlock and John.
There was a post on Keenan Grave about internet download caps, which seems to have caught light somewhat.
Ah, yeah, this is to do with the sort of the news that AT&T, apparently a large ISP provider in the United States, are planning on getting rid of unlimited download caps and introducing a whole system of tariffs based on certain different sliding scale of maximum amounts to download a month.
Didn't know the Americans still had unlimited downloads.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is something I've seen on a few different blogs. Tobold's chipped in as well, and you know, another European like us. And over here, we don't really get the eat as much as you can till you burst download.
You do,
tariffs.
But they've still covered in the... You can have as much as you want as long as it's not over.
Yeah, because I read all this and I thought, all right, and I started doing a bit of research. I went and looked at my own provider's terms and conditions, and the package I'm on it says unmetered access, and then it has two little asterisks next to it, so I scrolled right down to the bottom, and then down at the bottom it said subject to our fair use conditions, and there was a link, and I clicked on that link. And sure enough, if I go over 60 gigabytes a month, I start to get all sorts of... I don't know what happens, actually.
You get charged per
Do I get charged,
gigabyte.
Or do they just start throttling and kicking
They'll
me
They'll charge
stuff?
You.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what's the option? Would they rather not have you use it, or would they rather take more money from you?
Yeah. So so basically, yeah, and Tobold himself on a post on his blog was sort of exploring this a bit further, and... cited a case where he actually got billed for overuse due to the Asia Conan beta, during the course of which he was required to download a 32 gig client twice.
That's a bit
in
excessive.
One month, yeah, and he ended up going over and getting charged a couple of dollars extra for that particular thing. So the King Grave post there, it has a nice little chart where he's gone and found some research and lists what you can get with 1 gig. How much stuff will download, and the bit that is of interest to us is the how much online gaming can you do for 1 gig?
Would it want to run out?
Yeah, well, quite. Yeah, and he came out with a figure on his list there of 240 hours per month of standard online gaming, presumably.
Ah. Complete Conan and that.
Well, that's 1 gig. I mean, the package, the lowest package that AT&T seem to be proposing is a 5 gig a month limit. So you'd get.
I think 5's around the lowest over here as well.
Yeah, yeah, it seems sort of fairly reasonable. So working backwards with the old calculator, pen and paper, I've worked out that 5 gig at his 1 gig in 240 hours for 1 gig will get you is basically 4.2 megabytes an hour.
So, is that enough to be able to play a game for a month?
Well, I'm just checking my little pen and paper notepad here, my little scrawlings. 4.2 times 24 times 30 means if you were playing online games continuously, you know, no sleep, no stop, ever, for a whole month, you still only download 3 gigabytes.
Oh, so if you want to use it all, you're going to have to be going considerably faster, somewhere near the speed of light.
You need to or have two machines running Age of Conan continuously for an entire month. Yeah, well, okay. The 240 figure was quite fascinating, actually. So I did a bit of homework, and I set John some homework here as well, which was basically to monitor internet usage during play. Now, this all came about sort of mid this week, so I've only had 3 days' worth of stats here to check out. So Wednesday I was playing EVE Online, Factional Warfare, with voice chat.
That's the key.
Yeah, yeah. Which I've talked about on the blog and earlier in the What We're Playing bit. I was playing from 9:05 to 9:05, so it's 3 hours worth. And the mechanism I'm using, my router, it's a D-Link one, and it's got its own little web server built in, and you can browse directly to it to bring up a whole load of status pages in a browser. And what you can do with that, in there it lists TX and RX, you know, bytes received, bytes uploaded. And if you pull the plug on the router and put it back in again, it will reset that figure to zero. So that gave me a fairly easy metric to be able to monitor what's going on with all this. And 3 hours of EVE Online, Factional Warfare, Fleet Combat with voice, that came in at 39 meg downloaded.
Most of that's the voice then?
A lot of that's going to be the voice. That is a quite high figure for online gaming.
EVE's always been a very low bandwidth game. Used to put it on a modem.
Yeah, I didn't really have enough time to try a similar experiment with the voice turned off, but with the way EVE's going and the way most people play EVE, voice is pretty much essential, even if you're only listening. That works out about 13 meg an hour. So 13 meg an hour for EVE. So for five gig of that, you will get 384 hours of EVE in
that's
a month.
That's quite high.
Okay, Tabula Rasa was Thursday. I played from 8:35 to 11:45. That's about 3 hours again. 7 meg for that.
That's
that was just standard running around, missioning. We didn't do any instances, but there's four of us in the group. We were using text chat quite a bit. So standard sort of MMO gameplay as a whole. I mean, I'm not sure if Tabula Rasa is perhaps a little more intensive on up-down transmissions because of the way the shooting works, perhaps. But probably quite average for a normal MMO's upload, download sort of thing. I wasn't really measuring upload, because I didn't really think about it at the time, but presumably they'd be capped as well, would they?
I'm not sure if it's on the same number.
Anyway, so yeah, that was 2.3 megabytes an hour for Tabula Rasa.
Very good.
Standard general gameplay. And that I'd see that being a similar figure in most normal MMOs where you aren't using voice. Friday was Second Life. I popped back in there to mind the shop and so on.
That'd be a nice small one.
Yeah, Second Life, right. 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock. 126 megabytes. Which works out at 63 meg an hour. Just for those who don't know, Second Life does almost nothing as a pre-install. The install client for Second Life is about 30 meg compared to, you know, several DVDs for most normal games. And you download absolutely everything you see, touch, hear. It all has to be streamed to you directly. On top of that, Second Life has most media parcels in there, you know, most areas of land can have a streaming internet radio set, which I turned on. They can also have media textures set. In other words, you can set the side of a wall to stream internet video, which I also had turned on. I sort of wandered around a few different locations, you know, typical sort of average wandering Second Lifer. And also had voice going as well. You know, well, I'm trying to turn all the whistles and bells that Second Life offer on.
Got to be the worst case ever for any game.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got a colossal amount of bandwidth, and I wasn't really going that many different places, but every person, everything, every sound you hear, every texture you see, even the world geometry, the whole lot comes at you as and when, and it caches almost nothing of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, the quite staggering figure of 63 megabytes an hour for Second Life. Which is quite an eye opener. So that means for 5 gigabytes you can play Second Life for 79 hours.
That's still quite high.
And Tabula Rasa, for 5 gigabytes you can play that for 2,173 hours. And as we've remarked earlier, there aren't that many hours in a month.
Yes.
So yeah. So what does this mean for us then? This
Nothing.
Whole move. Well, not us here where we have capped access anyway already.
It means.
What does it mean for the American who's used to as much as they can gorge internet?
Second Life aside, it means nothing for your average games player. Mm. Where it does matter is the other media.
Yeah, yeah.
The big killer being video.
Yeah. So your homework was to have a look at the Xbox 360 side of it. What numbers did you come up with for that?
Well, I had a look. HD film rentals.
Oh, right. So, rentals. Oh, what? Do you have to upload it back again when you finish?
Yeah, you do. they are 5 gig.
5 gig?
For an HD film.
What? Just a standard 110 minute feature film.
So,
you download one of those and that's it? You've blown your cap already?
Yes.
Righto. And that'll take you 2 hours to watch.
Yeah. That's on the Xbox. It's a similar number, I assume, for HD downloads on the Mac, need an Apple TV to see that one. I don't have one. Normal SD films, so
that's your normal non-HD.
About a gig, and that's the same on the Xbox and on the
well, the data is the data,
and on iTunes.
Yeah. Okay, so you get five films.
Yeah, right. Five standard films. Uh-huh. TV shows about 500 meg.
God, right, and presumably those are going to be about. If it's a weekly show, you'll have four of those a month to download. If you're following something,
unless you buy an entire series at a time because you want to catch up, then you'll have 22-24 shows at that.
And you'll blow your cap again there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Music again. That will. If you download an awful lot of that, it's going to take it down.
Yeah. I don't know what this show will weigh in at because he hasn't done the editing yet.
About 70 meg.
Yeah. Last. Maybe more. The last episode of the Van Hemlock podcast was about 60 meg. So.
That's the
we're
key.
Grateful for you spending some of your allowance on us.
That's the key. It's podcasts that are going to do it. I listen to an awful lot of podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone talks for a long time. You're looking at 60, 70, 100 meg per show.
Yeah.
A couple of them are video.
Video podcasts, that's going to be worse. Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be back up to the sort of television episode, 500 megs. Or well, that Clear Skies Eve Machinima that I was recommending last time, that was about 500 meg.
So very quickly, people are going to run over these. The thing that I think will save it, though, AT&T being a specific example, is they have a deal with Apple to sell their phone in America.
Right.
So they're quite friendly with Apple. And having a download cap of 5 gig is really going to piss off the people like Microsoft and Apple and all of those media suppliers, Sony as well, when they launch their store.
Yeah. I mean, I think
and Netflix are going to be doing... Are they doing downloads now?
I'm not sure.
Not, don't even know who Netflix are.
Sorry.
So all of these companies are going to make them change their mind. They're going to have to.
I mean, sort of a wider issue that's perhaps more relevant to our listeners is the idea of digital distribution. Steams, your just patches.
Well, on the Xbox, you can download Xbox One games, and they're the size of a DVD.
Yeah. So, there's a client install for an online game, you know. It's because I always thought that digital distribution was the way forward, and the way that the way that high street game shops. Yeah, you see the death of PC gaming being a popular topic, and if you go to a high street game shop, you'd probably see the shrinking PC shelf and agree with it.
That's because everyone buys it off Amazon or Steam.
Yeah, exactly. It's the whole digital download is where the PC people have all gone. So
this threatens
that somewhat.
Well, take Conan's 32 gig.
Well, yeah, I mean that was a beta client, so it's the whole.
Although
game.
It comes on two DVDs now, so it can't be more than. However much,
yeah,
8 or 16.
A huge amount of debug information in there, but that's going to that'll have a knock-on effect there. It'll dissuade people from taking part in betas.
Take demos on the Xbox and the PlayStation; they're about a gig. Soon mounts up.
Yeah, you just don't really think. I mean, I've had the same ISP for quite a while now, and it has had this 60 gig cap, and I've never hit it. I don't think I'm not really one for vast amounts of download media in the background. I'll be playing a game, and that'll be that. So,
on the other hand, download an awful lot. I have a 50 gig cap, and I get close to it sometimes.
Yeah, and it's you start to have to sort of ration and start to plan ahead a bit, perhaps? Or do you just not really consciously think about it?
I happen to use about 50 gig in a month, just normally, naturally, so I don't have to think about it too much.
Yeah, we're using the 5 gig package as the example here, but I suspect most dedicated game types opt for the more expensive
plans. The
5 gig
package is the equivalent of the cheapo Tiscali stuff over
here. Yeah, it's your sort of casual home user who's not really a massive online obsessive like we are, but so if you're going to be serious about your online gaming, you're probably going to stump up and get pay a little bit more and get a better service. I mean, there's also there's a lot more factors involved than just how much you're allowed to download, things like the bandwidth, the speed of it,
also how long it's up for and how long it keeps kicking you off when you're trying to do
grumble demon internet grumble. Yeah,
I think these limits are something that the ISPs are trying to see how well they go down, and all that's going to happen is people will have to move up to the higher levels of subscription.
I mean, I suppose there's a certain fairness in the approach that they're taking here. I mean, this is in Tobold, I sort of went with this line here, which is basically that sort of 95% of the internet traffic is caused by 5% of problem users that are sort of clagging it all up for the rest of us. And why should they get it for free? Why should they get it all for free? Yeah. pay for what you use, perhaps. Yeah. I think perhaps a greater understanding of how much we actually use will help diffuse this somewhat.
The problem is it's incredibly easy to just go over.
Yeah.
You just need to click one button in iTunes and you can wipe out your bandwidth for the month.
Mm. So perhaps there's a need for better tools for monitoring and stuff. You can find that kind of stuff as free shareware and freeware. Yeah.
ISPs should be doing more to tell people what the bandwidth used is, because mine, for instance, is incredibly hard to find out how much I've actually used.
I don't know. I've found a page where I can see how much I've had this month. I think that would probably be quite useful. Yeah.
What will probably happen in the end is the individual companies will make deals with the ISPs, so for Apple or for Patches and Warcraft or whatever, it won't count towards your downloads.
What, special cases and
exceptions? Yeah, it's the only way it's going to really work. If you're going to have to, later on this year, the Xbox gets TV over IP.
What, streaming television? My one exception to the low internet usage is I do make a lot of use of the BBC's iPlayer.
Yeah.
Yeah, to catch up on telly I've missed. And the average show there will download for about 500 meg, so I can see myself even starting to rack stuff up when usually all I do is play online games.
But with the move to
2 meg an hour, you know.
With the move to digital, for the people who don't want a dish and can't get the over-the-air digital broadcast, stuff like the Xbox and the BBC Vision, which is the same service, are going to be the way of people to actually get their TV.
Yeah.
So that's just going to... I think if you're on BT Vision, it doesn't come off your bandwidth.
Right.
If you're with BT, that is.
I mean, something I saw, I forget who actually came up with this. It was one of the blogs I normally surf around, and they were basically reacting to the reactions to the outrage of all this sort of blowing up. And there was a fantastic line there, which is basically... Today's problem user is tomorrow's normal user.
That's very true.
Yeah, just because most of us can get by on 5 gig a month at the moment, you know, with our standard MMO gaming and perhaps limited occasional media downloads, doesn't mean to say that tomorrow's MMOs are going to be the same. Take Second Life. I mean, yeah, obviously it's not a proper MMO in the sense that most of our listeners would agree, but it does illustrate extreme cases of internet usage. You've got loads of streaming media there. You've got everything being fed to you at once, all sorts of different sounds and movies and all the rest of it. And I could see future MMOs adopting some of those ideas and becoming more and more bandwidth, more and more download heavy.
Well, if you've got a game which doesn't WoW do this with the trial, where it'll download the content as you play?
Not sure.
Because I can see that becoming more and more popular. Because you don't really want to be serving all of your new content
Guild Wars does this.
Patch day.
Yeah, Guild Wars does this. The first time you go to a zone, you'll take a lot longer than everyone else because you're downloading all the maps and arts and assets and stuff. I mean, the actual install footprint of Guild Wars is quite small. They've almost slightly gone with a sort of Second Life type model there, where you start with a very small sort of core install, and then as you progress through all these different zones and maps, it will download them once and take a little while to do so.
I think that's one of the reasons why WoW uses BitTorrent to put out their patches. They just wouldn't be able to give that much bandwidth to all of the people who want to download the second the servers come back up.
Yeah, yeah. So we think this particular incident is probably not anything to panic about, but it's definitely a portent of worries to come, perhaps.
It's going to be one of the... most important, biggest change to the internet over the next couple of years, probably.
Yeah.
This week, instead of actually planning this show in any way at all, I went off to a brewery. When I got back, you were on Messenger, having a little bit of a crisis.
A little, yeah.
Yes, what was this about?
I all got a bit emo this week. Basically, it suddenly occurred to me that I've just been playing 6 MMOs in 2 weeks. And,
is that not normal?
Well, increasingly it's becoming normal for me. And I got into Tabula Rasa and met up with a long-time online friend who'd sort of suddenly gone off to sign up for Age of Conan and would quite like me to join them too. And I like this person. I like hanging out with them. But I just got all a bit, I don't know, it all got a bit much, really. I was starting to feel a bit stretched. at the prospect of having to keep seven massively multiplayer games on the go in my usual week, during which sometimes I do go out and sometimes do other stuff. And it's the late nights, the 3 a.m. finishes, the being slumped at my desk in a comatose daze, you know. It's just, I'm just wondering how much more I can take, to be honest, how many more titles I can play. And I'm trying to, I just can't understand why I can't be happy with just one anymore.
Is it because you've done the just playing one thing and can't commit anymore?
I think it is a commitment thing, yeah. I don't think this is going to be a topic that's perhaps too alien to many people listening. I think if you're interested enough to be following blogs and podcasts about gaming in general, then you've perhaps yourself moved to a gaming in general type of mindset. I know I have. I started with EverQuest. It was the only game for me. It was the only one I played. I stuck with that for about 2 years. Didn't even occur to me to also be playing Asheron's Call and Ultima Online as well at the same time. It just seemed that the idea just seemed like madness. How could I dedicate myself to more than one game at a time? And now I just don't think twice of just dipping into whatever free trial comes up, keeping about two or three paid ones on the go, and also a number of free to play ones. I do miss and regret the ability to commit to one title now. I think perhaps I'm losing out somewhat by being so diverse.
Possibly, but have you escaped the chance of being caught in an older game? People still playing EverQuest.
I think everyone sticks with their first game for quite a long time. There'll be some reason, some eventual straw on the camel's back. They'll have had enough. I think perhaps it's not natural to be stuck in the same MMO for over 3 years in the first place.
How many hours can you put into a limited set of content?
How long are these games designed for? Well, it was different with EverQuest back in the day, you know, EverQuest 1, EverQuest Classic. It was a game that I never even imagined I'd ever complete. You know, it just didn't occur to me that perhaps I might have won this one day. I just went in there, I did my thing, you know, hunted monsters, hung out with friends and so on, and it just week in, week out. And, yeah, I suppose eventually it got a bit samey. You know, the first MMO, and you realise there are others out there, and they're all quite a lot the same. You sort of develop a cynicism, I think, perhaps. When I roll up to a brand new MMO now, I don't even imagine I'll be there a year or two.
No.
You know, unless it's particularly special and sort of groundbreaking.
Well, I've had the opposite problem. I've never really been able to commit in the first place. So, Eve being a different kettle of fish yet again, because, you know, the game doesn't really count as a normal game. It's all player driven, so the content keeps changing. But the fantasy games, I skit in and out of them. I will play them maybe once every fortnight or so, but I can never see myself actually only playing one at all.
Yeah, so it's the sameness of it, the repetition, basic repetition exercise of the MMO, that just doesn't really hook you in. You don't really feel like you're working your way toward a greater goal, perhaps.
I have a very low tolerance for grind.
I think my own tolerance for it's slacked off immensely. I tend to be drawn more towards games where the levels aren't an issue, or where, you know, there aren't levels.
I need to have a specific target. It may be beginning to get to a zone to see something, it may be just get a new bit of gear or whatever, but if I don't have a specific goal, I just don't have the enthusiasm enough to play.
And it all builds up. Each time you leave a game, the next one becomes a little less special.
Yeah.
The repeated betrayal of these games, that they leave their mark, yeah. And you become a bit of a game hopper, I suppose. That's just why I definitely am now, yeah. I mean, I think I'd be hard pressed to call my blog, or indeed this podcast, a particular game blog or podcast. Well, you know,
I'm in awe of the people who can do a specific game podcast or blog. It's just so incredibly difficult to me to actually be able to concentrate on the same game repeatedly for that long.
Yeah, well, it gives you a much greater depth of subject. You can really get your teeth into it all and know that your listeners are there to hear a particular thing.
Yeah. But it's coming up with the new content each week.
This also recently on Shut Up We're Talking, the most recent one of those, they had a little bit of a listener mail on this subject right at the start before they launched off into their own main topics, and there was Michael Zenke there was Darren Brent, and this came up, the idea that you sort of don't want to be a game hopper. I think Michael Zenke was warning people off, you know, try and stick with your first one, don't be like him, you know. And I think Brent came up with an interesting thing in that he now regards himself as a level 10 podcaster rather than a particular game class and level.
Yeah.
I assume what he meant there was that he seems to have sort of moved, well, not necessarily up, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a better thing, but moved to a different kind of outlook on the whole thing, in that it's more of a meta game that, based on the community around the games and the various news sites and webcasts, you know, podcasts and all the rest of it. It's sort of somehow that all of the games as individual games have become one large game,
yeah,
that he's playing, and I think perhaps to a lesser extent I do as well.
Well, I think the moment you get a group of people who you follow from game to game, mm-hmm, and you dip in and out,
your regular group, yeah,
then it's much more like a regular gaming group around a table than it is playing an individual game.
I think the culture of soloing and pickup grouping hasn't helped me much. I don't tend to form long, long-lasting associations as a whole. But I was thinking about this, and I thought, okay, so if easy solo content and random pickup grouping to get gear has been responsible for the death of game groups, you know, the idea that the group isn't, you know, a regular bunch of people you know and come to work with often. There'll be five strangers you'll probably never see again once you've got your shiny trinket.
Yeah.
And then we see in World of Warcraft how the guild is increasingly becoming this as well. You start to get pick up guilding, perhaps. Not on an individual session basis, but you won't stick around with one longer than it takes you to get your raid gear.
Yeah.
A large number of people hop from guild to guild once they've got all that guild can get them. I'm wondering if the next logical step up from that is the pickup MMO. Where it doesn't particularly matter what the game itself is anymore. You're just sort of moving from MMO to get your fix of exploration or achievement or whatever. And the game itself becomes a sort of modular stranger who you will probably never see again after your 2-3 months are up.
I think the main problem on that is there's no physical stuff you take between the games.
Well, you take your experiences, you take the enjoyment, perhaps, and the sort of comparisons as well. I find myself comparing a lot. You get into your new game, you think, right, that's your tank, that's your crowd control, you know, these are your mana potions, you know, and it doesn't matter what they're called or what epoch it's set in or what the backstory's like, you're just reducing it all down to a series of coloured blocks and abstract equations,
which
I think robs a lot of the fun out of it for me. I do envy newbies. Newbie's supposed to be an insult, noob, you know, and I the more and more of a veteran you become, I think the more you start to envy them. Start to realise that, oh, perhaps no, I wish I could do that again. You know, I wish I could see it all fresh, not have expectations. See it for a fantasy world, not a series of moving bags of improvement. You know, this kind of thing.
I have a slightly different view on the grouping aspect.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Whenever I get into a situation when I'm in a guild or something, I start feeling really pressured to actually have to put any effort into the game, which means I actually put less effort in and drift away from the game.
You see the social connections as a sort of tie and responsibility. Perhaps.
That they sit there saying, I must be logged in, I must be checking stuff.
Yeah.
Now I should probably be checking my guild, my corp forums to see if anything's happened.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you're a CEO, so adds a certain extra responsibility to it. But you didn't want to be that, really, did you?
Well,
you didn't set your sights on ambition, you know.
I didn't go out to get the role, no. Mm-hmm. I inherited it as the corp churned over.
Yeah. No one else wanted it.
And every day I log in, first thing I do is draft a post resigning, then delete it. Now my corp doesn't know if that's true.
I hope none of them are listening.
Hi, Mel.
But you take it seriously. You put the effort in.
Sometimes.
And that becomes a bit of a tie to that particular game.
Take that time in Galaxies.
When
we made the city.
Yeah, me and him were on a European server in Star Wars Galaxies. This is all pre-NGE.
Just when it launched.
Yeah, and this is just about the time they'd added player housing. Well, they added that sort of slightly after we all got started, didn't we? We started on this new server. And we just went out of our way to, I think it was Restus or somewhere. It was one of the cities on Rory or something. It's one of those really sort of out of the way moves.
The ones
that
no one ever goes to.
Yeah, and we went to a city that no one ever goes to, and we just started farting around in that city there and chatting to people, and eventually ended up forming a community around the whole thing. We used the Planet Chat that no one really knew existed, and we were using that to sort of keep in touch and coordinate and get. Just simple things like making sure there's an entertainer available if you need your mind wounds healing. Make sure that there was someone in the hospital.
Yeah, I was a doctor. It was
coordinating the trade skill people and the fighting people so we could keep avenues into the city clear and so on. And then it all sort of grew and became quite enjoyable for quite a long time. But towards the end, they added all sorts of... Yeah, you know, they added the player housing and the cities and the so on and all the rest of it, the player cities. And we got quite heavily involved in setting all that up, and it just began to draw and draw, didn't it?
Yeah, the bigger the community got, the more responsibility there was, and the less like a game it came.
Yeah, and ultimately that was probably the reason I quit the game.
Same here.
At that time,
I've been back since, but I can never play that game again properly.
I don't blame any of the people who came to rely on us.
They were all a really good bunch.
But yeah, just the sheer time pressure and the workness of it.
Yeah,
it really did. It
became a job.
Yeah, and you sort of sit there and you think, well, I could be just beating on kobolds in World of Warcraft right now, you know.
Well, you start thinking, I could be just doing this elsewhere in the game, and you think, but no, I'm doing this other content which is more meaningful.
Yeah,
and then you don't want to go off and beat on the wompers or whatever.
And you find yourself in this bizarre and absurd situation where you're signing up to another MMO as a holiday from the previous MMO that's your main. Oh, thank God I've got somewhere where I can just relax and be myself.
Well, they won't find me.
Yeah, and so there you go. You've got two MMOs on the go now. And then you start making friends in this new one. The whole cycle perpetuates, and eventually you find yourselves playing six MMOs and contemplating number seven, which is where I find myself at the moment.
I think this is where the hopping from guild to guild comes in.
Yeah.
And you try not to make any ties, but I can't do that either.
Yeah. I find myself quite unsociable in MMOs, quite isolated and deliberately soloing, and in a large part because I'm sort of worried about setting up these vast social networks that are going to come to rely on me and I'm going to come to rely on, and then suddenly find myself tied to this game and unable to quit well after the point where I find the game itself has gotten boring. And that can be a real problem. I imagine a great many people play World of Warcraft because their guild's still there, not because they like, you know, throwing themselves at Karazhan again and again.
Well, does anyone enjoy repeated raiding? I mean, okay, till you get it down spot on the first time, that's a nice challenge. You can do that. You can learn to do that.
Well, it's a task of a fixed duration. Yeah. You will complete it. You'll have mastered the dungeon.
Yeah.
And after that, well...
From then on, it's just a task of helping other people get their gear.
Which, again, there's a certain compassion to that and a certain camaraderie and social aspect to it. But the basic business of doing that dungeon over and over and over again, that can't be a lot of fun. But
if you're the main healer or whatever, when you feel compelled to be there because you're the best healer and
when
you're
the guild
the best
relies
chance.
On you. Yeah. So I've got six games on the go. That's our somewhat rambling and overextended what we're playing section told us.
So what are you going to randomly unsubscribe then?
Well, this is it. I'm going to have to cut some, otherwise I'm going to go mad, basically.
How long do you complete Tabula Rasa?
Well, I don't know. Right, well, Planet Side, that was really just a one-off. I popped in for the Massively event. I haven't been in after since. I had been playing sort of not so long ago. It's a sometimes game. I'll drop in again in the future when I've got a bit of spare time.
Luckily, it's one of those games which doesn't really suck you in for many, many hours because you get too dejected at dying lots.
Well, you get burned
out.
Or you
get too good at shooting people.
Your gun's too easy. Yeah, whichever. So Planet Side can go. That was not really... Oh, yeah, I say six. That's probably not really one. I think EverQuest 2, well, yeah. I mean, good or bad. By the, when their legacy thing finishes at the end of July, I think, I'm just going to let it go because I don't have time.
No.
It doesn't matter how good or bad it is, how much it's improved, how worse it is, or anything like that. There's actually nothing that game can do or not do that will make me subscribe to it because I just simply don't have the time. And it's the one I'm least involved in. See, because... What is a large deciding factor in what MMO I play and what I don't is my friends, you know, and that's the reason you're supposed to be there. It's not a bad thing. And the Guild Wars is going to keep going because there's a Tuesday Noob Club there. I've got quite a lot of friends in there. It's fun, yeah. It's a weekly thing. Also, it's free to play, which is less of a deciding factor than you'd think. If I was having the same kinds of experience in there and it was still $9 a month, I'd still play it. still pay and play because I'm enjoying that, the basic structure of it. So that's got to stay. Second Life, I've got to keep going with that because that pays me to play it. And also I've got friends in there that I would miss. Yeah. EVE Online, that's all getting all interesting and exciting at the moment.
It's just changed, though. The way you're going to play it's changed. It's now become more drop-in. Yeah. More drop-in PvP, so it's going to suit your playing style a bit better.
Yeah, but I'm also quite fascinated. I mean, you know, a lot of people think this is an EVE podcast because we talk about it so much, but that's basically because it's purely from an outside looking in perspective. It is one of the more interesting games. There's so much interesting things going on with it.
They're a lot more prepared to take risks.
A lot more news items come out of it. It just seems a much more dynamic and fascinating project to look at, even if you're not that interested in playing it. So, yeah, I'll probably keep that one going and drop in and do some Factional Warfare as I can. Tabula Rasa is about the only other one I'm paying for at the moment. I don't know. Particularly since the chap I usually hang out with in there has upsticked and gone to Age of Conan and wants me to follow. So, I want to see that through to 50, but I think I'm going to be viewing it as a tick-in-the-box job done, now I can walk away.
Oh, another WoW.
Very, very much how I approached World of Warcraft, yeah. I mean, I liked it, I enjoyed it, it's a good game. 10 million people can't be wrong, but I got to level 60, this is before Burning Crusade, I got to level 60 and felt I'd won, you know.
Yeah.
In the same way that a single-player game, you'll get to the end of the story, win the day, put it back on the shelf, maybe come back in like a year's time to have another playthrough later on. So far, I've not really had the time or inclination to go back to Warcraft. That's not a slight on Warcraft itself. I think it's a fine game, but just I don't have time for it. So I can take steps to bring that ridiculous number of MMOs down, but it's curious the decision making that goes into it, and in almost every case it's the ones my friends are playing. You know, for all my vaunted, oh, it's Van Hemlock, the wanderer of MMOs, I try a bit of everything, and at the end of the day I'm not that different to anyone else in that I want to play the games that my friends are playing, and the game only has to be fairly average or better on the technical side of it. I mean, a game, obviously if a game's absolutely atrocious, my friends probably won't be in there in the first place, but I am quite influenced by social reasons rather than purely technical or popularity ones.
So you're not going to quit them all over this?
What, just sort of sell the PC, go take up windsurfing or something? No. I'm at the core, I am an obsessive MMO gamer and I'll always be playing something, but I think it's probably important to try and keep those somethings down to a manageable number, otherwise you just end up with a sort of smorgasbord whistle-stop tour of everything and get nowhere in any of them, which is what I usually do.
And on that cheerful note,
yeah, you're listening to Emo Hour on the Van Hemlock Podcast, because everybody hurts sometimes.
That's it for another show.
Already?
Yeah.
Just getting into that.
Time flies.
I was unburdening.
My hot tip for this week is to watch Doctor Who.
Again, we've done that already.
Yeah, but it's at the end of the series. Isn't it?
That's coming up, yeah.
Big story.
Big finale. Uh-huh. Yeah. All right, well, my hot tip this week is it's the same thing as it is every year around this time. Like, yesterday was the longest day in the Northern Hemisphere, so I'm going to be doing what I do every year, which is going out and watching the sunset, wondering where the last 5 years went and crying myself to sleep. See you next time.